I'm Matt Wilson, and this is Ring the Bell Sucka. This is Movie Fighters, the show where Chris Sims and I, Matt Wilson, we watch movies and beat 'em up. We're watching a movie this time out in Chan for the Summer that features one Mr. Jonathan Knoxville.
It took me a minute to get what you were doing.
It was a jackass joke.
I got it. You know the crew that we all remember from the Jackass franchise. Which one are you and which one am I?
I don't think either one of us is a Steve-O.
I'm a Bam Margera, I think. I'm a Viva La Bam.
Okay.
And I think you're probably I think you're probably more of a Bam Margera, probably.
We're just a couple of Bams.
Couple bams, bamming it up here on Movie Fighters. Happy Chansmas in August, everyone.
Indeed. I would consider myself possibly to be a Chris Pontius, but...
No idea who that is. Literally no idea. Like, I only... Like, until you said Steve-O, I could not have named three of these guys.
I know many of the Jackass people, for better or worse.
Was Butterbean an official member?
No. No.
Because he was in the movie, and I feel like he did a bunch of the stunts.
He didn't. You might be thinking of Preston Lacey.
No, I'm definitely thinking of Brawl for All winner, Butterbean.
He was definitely not a regular member of the crew, I'll tell you that much.
Sure he was on the show. I'm sure of it. But let's talk about this movie, Matt. That's what we're here for. That's not these convoluted intros.
That's right. So, we're watching a bunch of Jackie Chan movies. This particular Jackie Chan movie is maybe the most recent one we could watch. It was released in the United States on September 2nd, 2016. So, it's less than a year old. And it is a Hong Kong-US collabo film. Like, just from the look of it, you would think it was just like one of Jackie Chan's American movies, right?
Well, I mean, it seems very American. I mean, we'll talk about the director in a minute, but it's a very American director.
It's Rennie Harlan. Rennie Harlan, yes. the director of, among other movies, Die Hard 2.
Die Hard 2, yep, that's him.
The Long Kiss Goodnight, yes, he killed...
Actually, I think a very underrated movie. Isn't that a Shane Black script?
It is indeed a Shane Black script, but it is widely considered to be the movie that killed, was it Carloco? Carloco, or whatever that production company is called. Director of Cutthroat Island, director of Deep Blue Sea, that was his big comeback.
Director
movie.
Of 12 Rounds, starring John Cena.
Indeed, which we have done on Movie Fighters. Very accomplished director Rennie Harlan, formerly married to Gina Davis. But that is actually where the Western film influence of the movie kind of ends. Because aside from Johnny Knoxville and former WWE Divas champion Eve Torres, almost everybody else in this movie is Chinese or possibly from Hong Kong. Because we've got Fan Bingbing in this.
I'm a big fan of Fan Bingbing, as you know.
Who you might recognize from... Which X-Men movie was she in? She played Blink in one of the...
Yeah, X-Men she played movies. Blink.
And lots of other Chinese actors in here. It is very much a Hong Kong film with a little bit of American sheen painted over it. In fact, it is widely known by its Chinese title, Zhui Di Tao Wang, instead of Skip Trace. So already, like, we're in weird territory with this. We're, like, not quite one of Jackie Chan's American movies, like, not quite a Shanghai Noon, but not quite, like, one of his martial arts films or weirder... Hong Kong comedies, like the last couple movies we've watched.
Yeah, look, just from the look of it, because I remember seeing trailers for this when it came out, and it's a movie I did not see in theaters. No one loves him more than we do, Matt. No one loves him more than you and I. I'm sitting under his smiling face right now.
Sure.
But it did not look good. In my view, based on those trailers, it's not Rush Hour, but it's not not Rush Hour.
The two recent Jackie Chan movies we've watched for Movie Fighters have been weird movies where Jackie Chan plays a criminal. We not only saw him playing a criminal in the sort of weird adaptation of Three Men and a Baby that he was in, but then in our last movie that we watched him in, Chinese Zodiac, he was also like a master thief. And this takes him back to being a cop. But it's not a buddy cop movie, because Johnny Knoxville is just an American con man who gets, like, pulled into things. So I kind of don't know what to expect at all. Like, is it going to be another one of his goofy comedies?
As much as this looks like it's the eighth movie in the Rush Hour expanded universe, I kind of have some high hopes for this. I don't dislike Johnny Knoxville as an actor. I don't think he's great, but I mean, you know, this movie was supposed to be Jackie Chan and Sean William Scott, so I think that's a pretty lateral move. And like I said, I'm probably a bigger Rennie Harlan guy than most people too, so I'm kind of hoping for the best.
Are you expecting like a full on goofy comedy or more of a like an action movie, or just based on what you've seen from this movie, do you have an idea of what we're going to get tone-wise? Because according to Netflix, it falls into the action and adventure, action comedies, and crime action and adventure genres.
I'm guessing action comedy. Like, I think probably more action than comedy, but still, like, I pictured the tone of a Rush Hour.
Okay.
More Rush Hour than Rush Hour 2. More Rush Hour than Shanghai Noon.
Okay. I can kind of see that. One thing to note is that this is not the first time Rennie Harlan and Jackie Chan have worked together. But their really? Previous collaboration, a movie called Nosebleed, was never released.
Really? Now, why is that?
I don't know. It may not have ever been finished. According to IMDb, Nosebleed would have been the only Hollywood film to allow Chan to use his signature 1 and 2 super stunts.
Interesting.
So, who knows? I don't have a ton of expectations for this movie. I guess the big question that I have is, do you feel like this could be better or worse than Robin B. Hood or Chinese Zodiac?
I think it's going to be better than Chinese Zodiac, but probably not as good, in very large scare quotes, as Rob B. Hood. Because Rob B. Hood is by far one of the most memorable movies we have ever watched.
Memorable, but not good. So,
yeah, I had fun watching it after a certain point. I will say this is an interesting thing about this movie, Matt. Like you said, it is a Chinese production, but directed by Rennie Harlan. Since this movie, it has been announced that Rennie Harlan is directing 3 more movies for the Chinese market. He's doing Legend of the Ancient Sword, based on a Chinese video game, a movie called Hanging Coffins for Shanghai Film Group, and then he's going to be directing Operation Somalia, based on the real story of a rescue operation against Somali pirates mounted by Chinese special forces. So this is like the start of his, like, the rebirth of Rennie Harlan.
But only in China.
In the Chinese market, yes.
It makes me wonder if there's going to be a whole migration of American filmmakers to China as the Chinese film market grows.
I wonder.
Because, you know, we hear about, like, all these entertainment companies expanding into China. Like, WWE is doing it. It makes one wonder if your Rennie Harlan's and Johnny Knoxville's, your American directors and actors who maybe had their moment and perhaps their moment passed, if they're gonna to head over to China to try to have a moment there.
I have a surprise for you.
Ooh. I love a surprise.
I have a bonus Chan.
Bonus Chan.
That's right, Matt. I watched a weird Jackie Chan movie by myself because I was on a plane. And let me tell you what market Delta Airlines is really excited about. That's right. The same market that's hungry for all those new Rennie Harlan movies, China. If you are on a Delta Airlines flight and they have movies, they have, and honestly, it's not just China. They have a ton of international movies, but that means they have Jackie Chan movies that I had never seen or heard of. Available to watch. So when Aiden and I were flying back from Minneapolis just a couple weeks ago, I jumped in and watched Railroad Tigers.
Railroad Tigers?
A 2016 action comedy about a team of railroad workers who are working secretly as freedom fighters against the Japanese occupation in World War II. And Jackie Chan was kind of like the grizzled old head of the crew. The entire plot of the movie revolves around them trying to blow up a specific bridge, and it's kind of broken down into different episodes. It's not the best movie that I have ever seen, but it's so weird to see like a new unknown Jackie Chan movie and have it be, yeah, this is, I'll watch this on a plane. Which, it's so weird to be in that part of his career now. But I will say, much like Chinese Zodiac, this movie felt like Jackie kind of giving the rub to a new generation. Because it's a big ensemble movie about a team. So I feel like that's, you know, that's where Jackie's at in his career when he's not slumming it with Johnny Knoxville.
While we're talking about Chinese Zodiac, we got a pretty strong response to our Chinese Zodiac episode, and a lot of response that said that movie is essentially propaganda. It is essentially for a particular Chinese audience, and that the heads that are being recovered in that movie are heads that are actually in reality missing. It's this weird mix of like real history and fiction in this thing specifically devoted to a Chinese audience that is very interested in the recovery of these ancient artifacts, which kind of explains the big like, I really want these artifacts to be returned speech at the end of the movie or message at the end of the movie. It seems like Railroad Tigers might be kind of the same deal as that. It's the let's making China look good in history kind of movie for a particular Chinese audience. Almost nationalistic might be too strong a word, but certainly like patriotic yeah. Chinese movies.
But I mean, we definitely got that impression, I think, from watching it.
Also, Railroad Tigers was released in very limited release in the United States in January.
Really?
Of this year. I don't know where you could go see it, but it was released in limited release in the U.S. Okay. Time for Skip Trace. But before we watch it, Chris, it's time for the hottest segment in all of podcasting. It's time for Snack Situation. You'll have to fight for something to eat. Sometimes it's savory, sometimes it's sweet. Snack Situation. What's your snacking on? Now, Chris, if I could pull back the curtain here a little bit, we are recording this episode of Movie Fighters a little later than we typically do. This is the evening time where we usually record this in the afternoon. So it's sort of dessert situation that we're doing here.
It certainly is for me.
Well, Chris, what are you having? What are you snacking on or perhaps desserting on during Skip Trace?
Well, like you said, it is post-dinner time. My lovely wife made a chicken scallopini for dinner that was very, very good. But I have something a little trashy for my snack situation, dessert situation time. You know it's Chansmas.
It's
the yearly semi-weekly celebration of Jackie Chan that we celebrate every year. Everyone's favorite traditional long-lasting holiday.
The 3 months of Chan.
the 3 months of Chan. July, August, and December.
Well, September is when we're going to do the next Chan movie, but sure.
Are we going to do another one? Are we going to do Around the World in 80 Days?
Yeah. We already said we were going to do it, so we're doing it.
Oh, I forgot. Okay, yeah. So the second month of Chansmas. And as you know, I take my Chansmas very seriously. Are you familiar with Little Debbie Christmas Tree Cakes, Matt?
100% I am.
Okay, here's a hot piece of news for you, my man. You can get those at a store right now. It is August, and instead of being Christmas tree cakes, they are marketed as Happy Camper Summer Camp themed cakes.
Oh, and they're like just green trees?
They're green. They just have green icing instead of white icing, but they taste the exact same. And I am choosing to view them as Chansmas trees.
Lovely. That's lovely.
Matt, what are you snacking on tonight?
I'm being a cake boy, too. Today, my lovely wife, Marlene, decided that she wanted to spend some of her day off making a strawberry cake with strawberry cream cheese icing. And it's very tasty and delicious. And I have a piece of that very cake in front of me. And I will be eating that while we're watching Skip Trace. I'm very excited to have this from scratch cake with homemade icing, all with some delicious strawberry flavor. Strawberry, one of my favorite fruit flavors.
See, this is when we should be eating Beijing Special Product.
There was a lot to get through in the Beijing Special Product, and
that's true.
And we've got a lot of Chan to focus on. So just eating some delicious cake so we can focus fully on the Chan, I think is a good plan. So if you want to eat some delicious cake with us, watch Skip Trace with us. This movie is available on Netflix. You can find it with relative ease. Pop it on, watch it during this break that's coming up. During that break, you're going to hear an ad. You're going to hear a little musical interlude. After that break, we're going to come back and talk about Skip Trace. Maybe you'll watch it with us. Maybe you will just skip on to the next part where we're talking about the movie. Either way, we will talk about the movie when we return. And we are back from watching Skip Trace, and I think we've decided, you know, before we started watching the movie, we asked how we thought this one would rank up against Chinese Zodiac and Rob B. Hood, and I'm going to say easily the worst of the three. Rob B. Hood and Chinese Zodiac were both also bad, but like, in kind of a fun and entertaining way, at least they got to the point of being wild beyond belief, right? They had, like, unbelievable things happening. This movie was just, like, frustrating, exhaustingly bad. Like, exhaustingly kind of boringly bad.
It was bad, Matt. This was a rough one, buddy. It was... And like, in a kind of depressing way, like, I think I made you laugh harder than I have ever made you laugh in my life by telling you that watching the stunts in this movie, watching Jackie Chan do the stunts in this movie, was like watching your dad cry.
It's really funny. That's a really funny comparison and super accurate. I've never thought before, like even in the bad Jackie Chan movies we've watched and the less good ones that I've seen otherwise, I've never been like, I think maybe Jackie's kind of lost it. But this one brought me to that edge.
I mean, even in Chinese Zodiac, we were like, you know, that's really him doing the crazy skate suit. And that was in 2012. That wasn't that long ago. I mean, I guess it's 5 years now, but still.
He didn't really do much in this one. And none of the action is particularly good. Like, none of it is particularly clever or entertaining or well choreographed.
There's one bit in one fight scene that is legitimately genius, like classic Jackie, like as good as any Jackie Chan like bit. But that's it. Like there aren't like there's not even really there's like two fights in the movie, and it's an action movie. Like it is like we talked about whether it was going to be like feel more like a Rush Hour or feel more like something else. But it's I mean it's an action movie, right? Like it's pretty straight up. Like there's attempts at comedy, but it is an action movie through and through. Any action.
It's honestly a buddy chase movie. I said while we were watching this that the title shouldn't have been Skip Trace. It should have been Shitty Midnight Run.
Yeah, the Defiant Ones, but bad.
Because it's basically Midnight Run. It's a kind of cop figure, even though in Midnight Run it's a bounty hunter, and a criminal having to work together to get to a certain place by a certain time. But sometimes they're at odds with each other until they realize that they actually respect each other and are friends. Mm-hmm. It is that exact plot. And it's neither an enjoyable action movie nor funny. Like, it fails on both fronts. In the cold open, we get a scene where we see Jackie Chan, his character Benny Chan, and his former partner, whose name is Young.
No, this is his current partner. He is his partner.
Well, this is a flashback, though, because the first thing we see that happens to Young is he dies. He is, like, tied up, hanging off a crane. He's got all kinds of dynamite, like a big bomb strapped to him. To save this factory that he's in, and to save Jackie, he gives Jackie his watch, and then purposely cuts himself down from the crane and falls into the water below him and blows up. That's the first thing we see of Young. And really the only thing we see of Young until the swerve comes later in the movie.
Yeah, I want to specify, we see this motherfucker explode in no uncertain terms. Like, it is the most definitive possible death you can have. He falls off the crane. The moment he hits the water, there is a huge explosion. Like, and Jackie Chan sees it. Like, Jackie's there to watch this.
Yeah, yeah. It would be an incredible act of artifice, an incredible illusion to fake that death. Let's just make that clear.
Yes.
So, in addition to giving Jackie, or Benny, his watch, he also tells Benny, hey, take care of my daughter, Samantha. You're her godfather. I'm going to die, so take care of her. Flash forward to 9 years later. Benny is obsessed with tracking down this crime boss called the Matador, because he believes that the Matador is responsible for Young's death. He also believes that the Matador is this billionaire named Victor Wong. There's some dialogue in here about how he's basically ruining his life chasing after the Matador. Like, he's not sleeping, he's spending all his time chasing the Matador, trying to make connections, trying to pin things on Victor Wong. And it's making his bosses, particularly this one kind of shady-seeming captain, take him to task for it.
We talk about him destroying all the houses, Matt?
Oh, well, yeah, we should probably talk about that sequence.
Because that happens first. They're investigating the Matador, and they're following this guy whose name, I think they call him, like, Handsome Johnny or something. They call him Handsome Something. And as far as I know, that's the only name he's given throughout the movie. He's a good-looking guy with a cane.
Yeah.
So you know that he is going to have a sword in that cane and that there is going to be a fight scene later.
He's the Matador's number one lieutenant, it seems.
Yeah. He goes in, and Jackie Chan is following him because there's going to be a drug deal at this house that's like... Or is it a house? It's like... I guess it is, because they're called homes later. it's a house that's like on a wharf. It's on like pilings out in the water.
Yeah, it's built on...
Jackie goes in.
It's built on these... on a pier, essentially.
Yeah.
There's no land underneath it. There's just a structure going down into the water.
Jackie goes in there. There's a bit with a dog where the dog is a watchdog, but it just wants to play fetch. And it ends up dropping this tennis ball down the stairs, and so Jackie gets found out. We get like a little bit of a fight scene where nothing interesting or fun happens. It's literally like everything in this movie as far as like the fights and the action go, like the stunt stuff, is stuff from other Jackie Chan movies, which is just, it's heartbreaking.
Or other movies entirely, which we'll mention when we get to the Johnny Knoxville parts.
Yeah. So the only thing that really sets this fight scene apart is that there's a woman that Jackie works with who's a cop. And at one point, like, one of the bad guys just picks her up and fucking chucks her through a window. Mm-hmm. In a, like, it looks harsh. But that's it. That's like the only noticeable or notable moment of the fight. It all ends up, the bad guys get away, and then they're getting away on a speedboat, and Jackie throws like an anchor or something at their boat that's attached to two other boats that are moored on the pilings at the house. And it pulls down the house, and then the house collapses, and then like dominoes, it knocks over all the other houses on the wharf. So like 9 buildings kind of slide into each other, and which is bananas. It's like on it's on like video game rules.
Well, it feels like Jackie Chan trying to do a Buster Keaton thing.
Yeah, and which he's done before and done, yeah, like much better versions of like Buster Keaton stunts.
Yeah, and the way you know this is an action comedy is that the facade of one of the houses comes down, and inside there is a guy taking a shower. So we see his comedy butt.
Hey, Matt. Hey, Matt. This guy that you're talking about.
Yeah.
Is he, like, a little bit chubby?
He's a little... Look, when I was a teenager, I got teased for liking guys in the shower who are a little on the thicker side.
I love my thick comedy butt.
I was watching, this is totally unrelated, but I was watching,
hey, by the way, stamp this podcast August 13th, 2017 with that good joke.
I was watching a video where Alison Brie was talking about GLOW, in fact, and somehow we brought up GLOW when we were watching the movie. And she was talking about the difference between sexy butt and comedy butt. Like, mm-hmm, sexy nudity and comedy nudity. And this was 100% comedy nudity. So that's how you know this is an action comedy. But then that guy, whose comedy butt we just saw, gets exploded and dies.
Yeah. Yeah. Because, like, there's a huge explosion that flings, like, a bad CGI Jackie Chan away. And, like, he's dead, I guess?
There's no way that guy survived that. There's, like, because all the houses explode. And when Benny is getting chewed out by his boss for being harsh in his pursuit of the Matador, we hear that, like, all those houses were completely destroyed. Like, 7 houses. So that's what's going on with Benny. Meanwhile, cut to somewhere in Russia, which is the actual title card that comes up. Connor Watts, played by Johnny Knoxville. Well, he's Johnny Knoxville, and this is Bowling Game. He's tied up with, like, upside down.
Matt, did the bits on Jackass, did they have, like, clever pun names?
No, never.
Because this could be 7-10 splitting headache.
Yeah, it was never like that. It was just like, I'm Johnny Knoxville, and this is upside down bowling. I mean, that would be like the titles of the things on Jackass every time.
Listeners, if you don't think that 90% of what me and Matt said to each other while we were watching this movie was, "Hi, I'm Johnny Knoxville, and this is..." then you are incorrect.
Yeah,
it was a great running bit from us.
Yeah, too bad we weren't recording during the movie. But the every like recurring set piece action thing we would definitely do. "Hi, this is Johnny Knoxville, and this is..." Or, "Hi, I'm Johnny Knoxville, and this is blank..." Whatever was happening. Anyway, my favorite one was definitely when they were infiltrating that boat, and I said, "Hi, I'm Johnny Knoxville, and this is Frigate Sneak."
Matt, I gotta say, no one that I've ever known has been able to choose comedy words the way you can.
Thank you very much.
Because, like, Ship Sneak is funny. Frigate Sneak is... mwah. Yeah, boy, yeah, boy. Mwah.
That makes me feel good inside. So he's hanging up upside down, and Eve Torres, who is the enforcer, the main muscle, she is described as a Terminator at one point for a bunch of Russian mobsters to whom Johnny Knoxville is indebted, is chucking bowling balls at his head down the lane, and then they're pulling him up just before the bowling ball's hitting his head. What we discover at this point is that he has actually, apparently, fathered the child of one of the Russian mobster's daughters?
Do we get that at this point?
Yeah.
Because I thought all we saw was the upside-down bowling thing. Until we got back from the fucking sub flashback.
Well, either way, that's why he's there. He's been blamed for fathering this illegitimate child of this Russian mobster's daughter.
Because we get a straight the fuck up freeze frame. "This is me. I bet you're wondering how I got here."
Yeah, it's the only thing it's missing is a record scratch.
Yeah, and we get fucking narration from Johnny Knoxville that we get twice in this movie,
and at no other point.
And the flashback that we get doesn't actually explain why he's there, which made me so mad. Because we see a bunch of shit that's relevant to the plot of this movie, but we don't actually see... That's what it is. We don't see the reason he's there until we cut back, and that's when the girl's like, "Hey, I'm pregnant."
It's maddening. It's maddening. And it's the same thing. It does the same thing as what happens with Jung, where... we don't actually understand why Jung does any of the shit he does later in the movie. All we see him do is die.
Yeah, yeah.
So anyway, flashback to Johnny Knoxville. He's at the MGM casino in Macau. Or Macau. Macau? Is it Macau?
Macau.
Which is, you know, just across the bay from Hong Kong. So I don't know what kind of jurisdictional stuff is going on there, but Samantha, who is the girl who was Jung's daughter and Jackie's goddaughter, also works at this casino.
Well, before that, we see there's a bit where that's meant to establish him as a ladies' man and like a scoundrel with a heart of gold, because we see him on a plane.
Yeah.
Where a plane seat that has enough space around it that six people can gather standing straight up and listen to him tell a story, which is that is the most unbelievable thing in this movie.
Next to him is empty and he's got like his bag in it. That's fucking infuriating.
Yeah, like that's Matt, the plane I was on that I watched the other Jackie Chan movie on, Railroad Tigers.
Yeah.
The seat across from me, across the aisle, was empty, and like the person across the aisle had the window seat with two empty seats, and I asked the flight attendant, I was like, "Hey, can I grab that other aisle seat so like me and my wife can spread out a little bit?" And she was like, "Well, we got to wait till the door closed." Last motherfucker who came in the door, last dude who came in the door on the plane, grabbed that seat. I was mad.
Hate it.
Meanwhile, this motherfucker's got enough space to have a fucking cocktail party, and he's telling them a tear-jerking story that the guy in the seat next to him points out is the plot of The Notebook, which is a very funny gag, very poorly done.
Yeah. It is what should have been funny and isn't because of very, very terrible execution.
Yeah. Also, like, Johnny Knoxville, I don't want to come off as rude. Johnny Knoxville is meant to be a stone-cold fox in this movie. He is meant to be super handsome and sexy and alluring. Go look up a picture of Fan Bingbing if you don't know what she looks like. She's gorgeous.
At one point, he describes himself as a handsome American.
Yeah, he literally calls himself handsome in this movie. He's not bad looking, and I don't want to be mean. He does look like he is the same age as Jackie Chan, a man who is 17 years his senior.
In addition to the stuff on the airplane, we see a scene where he, like, kind of semi-seduces an attendant at the airport. And he's doing a fake British accent, but I only knew that because the subtitles said he was doing a British accent, because it didn't sound like he was doing one at all.
Yeah, well, his voice in general in this movie is all over the fucking map.
He sounds the most Knoxville, the most southern, the most rednecky I've ever heard Johnny Knoxville sound. And I saw that fucking Dukes of Hazzard movie he was in. Then he goes to the MGM in Macau. And he shows up there looking like what I assume Chinese people think is the most stereotypical American. He's wearing, like, cowboy clothes, and he has a fake mustache, and he's doing, like, oil tycoon shit. And there's a sense, but we never see this happen, that he has defrauded the casino of some money. He's playing baccarat. He's up to some shady stuff at the casino, but we don't really see any of that happen. What we do see is Samantha approach him and say, "Hey, rare that we get, you know, an American coming in here who's such a high roller as yourself playing baccarat. We'd like to offer you a suite." He is given a suite, and he goes up to the suite and like is enjoying the view when, seemingly the next morning, a knock comes on the door, and he thinks it's going to be Samantha, but he doesn't get back into costume. He just answers the door normally, and instead, it's these Russian mobsters who have been chasing after him. So the Russian mobsters chase him around through the casino, and he uses a stolen key card, a key card he stole from Samantha, to get in the elevator and go up to the VIP level. Now, all of this
I like about this plot is that it's so simple.
Yeah. And it's also all told in a very, very disjointed way. Like, yeah, we get it in such weird bits and pieces.
I mentioned before we watched the movie, like, I think Rennie Harlan has done some pretty good stuff. I mean, you know, he's no John McTiernan, for sure.
Yeah.
Die Hard 2 is no Die Hard 1. But, like, this movie's the direction sucks, dude. It's bad.
I mean, I could possibly blame it on the script or the editing, but some of the stuff, direction-wise, just, like, the shots are bad, the special effects are bad, and the story, like we said, is mega disjointed, because what happens once he gets
inside the
elevator?
We haven't even gotten to the plot yet.
Not really. What happens once he gets inside the elevator is that he uses this key card he stole from Samantha to go to the top floor, which is like the executive VIP level. And when he gets up there, the elevator opens and he sees this woman running toward the elevator. Her name's Esther Yee. She's running toward the elevator. It's not really clear why she's running. But then, as she's coming toward the elevator, Victor Wong, who is the guy that Benny thinks is the matador, pulls out a gun and shoots her in the back. Then she gets on the elevator with Johnny Knoxville, with Connor. The doors close, and she dies in his arms and gives him a cell phone. It's ostensibly because this is evidence against the matador. Maybe she's an undercover cop or something. We never find out anything about Esther Yee or why she's there or what her deal is.
She just no idea.
She's there to die and pass off a cell phone.
Well, and we also don't see her pass off the cell phone here. We don't get that for like another half an hour.
We don't see her die here. We cut from Johnny Knoxville getting in the elevator and going to the VIP level to him leaving the casino. And we don't get the stuff about him going to the VIP level and seeing Esther Yee die until later when he tells Jackie Chan about it. And I don't know why. Like, why did we need to see that? Like, why did we have to have two separate flashbacks to Johnny Knoxville in this fucking casino? Could we get that all out of the way in one scene?
We are like 20 minutes into the movie at this point, and we've gotten 5 minutes worth of information. Like, this movie could be moving so much faster.
Also, in the midst of all this, Samantha goes to her godfather, Benny, and tells him, hey, I need you to track down this guy. Some bad stuff happened, and my bosses at the casino are gonna kill me if we don't find him because they say he stole a bunch of money from the casino. When in fact, it's not about stealing money from the casino. It's because he witnessed Victor Wong killing this woman. But Samantha thinks it's about the stolen money. So somehow, very quickly, the Hong Kong police track down Connor to Siberia. And we discover that Benny has been in the room with the bowling setup the whole time it's been there. And he like jumps in and breaks it up and gets into a little fight with Eve Torres and with some of the other Russian mobsters. Also during that bowling part, actually in the casino and during the bowling part, there are like several stolen shots from the Big Lebowski. Stolen might be a strong word, but like direct homages to the Big Lebowski, like Johnny Knoxville's head gets plunged into a toilet. And some of those bowling shots are very similar to stuff in The Big Lebowski, which comes out of nowhere. Like,
stolen is too harsh. Homage is far too gentle.
Yeah, I don't know what the fuck Rennie Harlan is up to in this movie. What are you doing?
It's bizonkers. So from there, we get, like, what should be a fun physical comedy action setup. Because, like, Johnny Knoxville, there's rope wrapped around him, like, shoulders to waist, so he's, like, hopping in place as Jackie tries to get him away. And there's some bits where, like, he rolls down a banister and ends up landing in a trash can, and the trash can rolls down the street. But it's all perfunctory, I guess is the way to put it. Like, did you feel that? Like, it's very, here we go, joyless. It's joyless.
That might be the way to put it, because Robin B. Hood had a few action sequences like this,
mm-hmm.
but they were more fun. Like the stuff in Robin B. Hood where the stroller, for instance, is like rolling down the road and Jackie's having to chase after it and make sure it doesn't get hit by cars. That's like fun and exciting. There's like no stakes to this. There's a lot of like Johnny Knoxville just being like, oh, my balls are getting hit inside the trash can or whatever. It's just not fun. There's no like interestingly timed stuff. There's just nothing clever about any of it.
Eventually the fight kind of spills over to this. It's a toy factory, but the only thing we actually see in the toy factory are Matryoshka dolls, which is hilarious that they're in Russia and they wind up fighting in a Matryoshka doll factory. There's a couple of decent bits here, like Johnny Knoxville ends up like tied up on a conveyor belt, like he's fucking being murdered by Snidely Whiplash, and getting, you know, stamped on the face. Like, it's very cartoony.
It's also like he's doing a Jackass stunt.
Yes.
We talked about how we kept doing the gags about these being Jackass stunts, but it's almost as if Rennie Harlan or the writers of this movie or whoever cast Johnny Knoxville because his character keeps getting pulled into situations that are basically Jackass stunts. just not as fun because he's not really doing them. They're stunts for a movie.
Yeah. Yeah. It's weird. This is also, though, where we get, I would say, the undisputed high point of the movie, which is Jackie's fight with Eve Torres. But the setup to it is weird because he's like, oh, I don't want to fight a girl, which is like, Jackie, it's 2016. You've been in movies for 40 years. We've seen you fight ladies before. We know it's like, it's a modern time now. You don't have to do this bit again. But she pulls out a pair of brass knuckles and they start fighting. And he grabs this giant Matryoshka doll. And every time she throws a punch, it shatters the outermost one to reveal a smaller one. And so she keeps throwing punches and he keeps blocking it, but the dolls are getting smaller and smaller and smaller as they go. And it looks like it's a real effect. Like, because you can see, like, there's pieces of it that he ends up, like, you know, having his hand stuck through. And it's a really, like, funny bit. Like, genuinely well shot, genuinely clever. It's an action setup I've never seen before. It's really good. It lasts about 30 seconds.
And it's followed by what might be the worst gag in the whole movie, because Jackie sidles through these two steel poles and manages to get through those, and then Eve Torres tries to go through them and gets stuck. And Jackie says to her, D? Or maybe size D? And she says, double D. Because of boobs.
Yeah.
See, because of boobs she got stuck in there?
It's, you know, that's why you can't have the ladies in the fight scene. They're just going to get, the boobs are going to get stuck everywhere, I guess.
Then Jackie fucking tries to murder her. It's fucking attempted murder because she gets stuck on a spinning machine that, like, wraps up the boxes that toys get shipped in, and it's got these big pieces of plastic, and so she gets wrapped up in plastic and would definitely suffocate to death in there.
Yeah, he, like, wraps shrink wrap around her head. That's among the most dangerous stunts I've seen in a Jackie Chan movie, to be honest. I'm surprised. First of all, I'm surprised Eve Torres, the person, agreed to that. I'm also surprised that, like, Eve Torres' character managed to return later in the movie.
Yep. She's fine later, though. So yeah. Then we have the setup for the remainder of the movie, most of the rest of the movie.
Well, okay. Because then Jackie takes Johnny Knoxville back to Hong Kong. This takes an hour and 15 minutes.
Okay. What Benny explains to Connor is that he has 2 days. 2 days, 48 hours, to get Connor back to Hong Kong and back to Macau, to the casino, or Samantha's going to die, so he's got to get her back. What follows, one, could not conceivably take 2 days, and two, feels like it's a month and a fucking half. What we get is a road trip thing where Benny and Connor go from somewhere in Siberia through Russia, through Mongolia, down to the Chinese border, all the way down through China to Hong Kong.
From Siberia to the border is 1,242 miles, Matt.
And
that's where they are at the start of day two.
And this is how they travel, okay? They take a train for part of it. Somehow they manage to get on a train. But they have to, like, jump off the train because they don't have tickets or something. Connor has burned up Benny's passport. So they can't fly back anywhere. So once they get to Mongolia, and it seems like they get to Mongolia somewhat quickly because of that train ride, they buy a car from this, like, local car dealer guy, And there's this extended gag, and by extended, I mean interminable, about the car dealer speaking some local Mongolian dialect that Johnny Knoxville doesn't understand at all, and Jackie barely understands. And he's trying to sell him these, like, beat-up, smashed-up cars. And then finally he points to this, like, three-wheeled wagon with a motor in it that he hilariously says is a 2016 model.
Mm-hmm.
And then they kind of press him on it, and he's like, I'm sorry, I mean 2012. Which, again, sounds like it should be an okay gag, but isn't.
Yeah. It's weirdly set up. Like, the guy's dialogue isn't subtitled, and it's kind of like we're meant to be, like, neither Jackie nor Johnny Knoxville are meant to know what he's saying, but, like, the whole thing, it goes on forever.
So they're driving in this vehicle, and they go, I don't know, maybe a few hundred miles in it before it runs out of gas. And there's some stuff about, like, Connor trying to get Benny out of the car and run away with it, and Benny has to catch up with him, whatever, whatever. Like, that happens several times throughout the movie where Connor tries to get away from Benny, and Benny finds him. In the end, the car breaks down, and they decide that they're going to, once again, have to walk across the fucking Gobi Desert.
Mm-hmm.
So they are walking across the Gobi Desert when they are captured by these Mongolian, I don't know, these people who live in tents. They kind of have a tent village out in the desert. And they have these weird rituals and contests that are like wrestling matches where people stand in a big circle and they fight. And so Johnny Knoxville's getting beaten up, and then Jackie arrives because Johnny Knoxville tried to run away from him again. And so once Johnny Knoxville gets beaten up to a certain amount, Jackie Chan goes in there and starts wrestling with this big guy who's standing in the circle. And in the middle of that fight, some guy from the crowd just points to Jackie and says, like, hey, that guy helped my daughter. He has honor.
No, it's...
And they stop.
It's from when Johnny Knoxville stole the horse, and they saw the kid who had fallen off the horse, and Jackie stopped to help him. It's so weird.
Then they camp out with group of Mongolians that night and sing Rollin' in the Deep by Adele.
Yeah, that's the second and final amazing thing that happens in this movie. Two good things.
Yeah. From there, the next morning, Johnny Knoxville tries to escape with a horse, but Jackie Chan catches up with him and stops him. They both get on horses. They ride horses to the Chinese border. At the Chinese border, once again, Connor decides that he's going to try to get away. And the way that he decides that he's going to do this is by saying that he's an American and he should be taken to Hong Kong himself, and that Jackie needs to stay there. He tries some kind of like weird begging for help, saying I'm an American kind of thing. I don't really totally understand what his gambit there is.
I think he's trying to convince them that Jackie's kidnapping him.
But what it all results in is they both get arrested by the police. And the police say they're going to take him back to Hong Kong. So they get thrown in a police van and are being transported to Hong Kong, when that van gets stopped in the middle of the road because there's this huge cart of like plastic bottles. It's this cart with big, big bags of plastic bottles in it, blocking the road. Also a bunch of goats. And this is when the Russian mobsters show up again and try to take Johnny Knoxville one more time. They do not succeed. And there's a weird cut here to Johnny Knoxville and Jackie Chan getting away and blowing up pig skins as like flotation devices and putting them on a raft and going down a river. This is the moment that felt the most absolutely disorienting, like we definitely missed something. Because it goes straight from the Russian mobsters trying to capture them to this thing where they're making a raft to go down a river. Like, I have no idea how they got from point A to point B on that one.
This is the easiest setup in the world, Matt. It's the easiest setup in the world. Two mismatched buddies go from set piece to set piece, try it, like, on the road. It's a road comedy. It's the easiest thing in the world, and none of it makes sense. Like, even the tiniest bit, we are forced to have justifications for in our heads.
Like, okay, so when Benny and Connor go down the river, there's a whole sequence where they get caught up in some rapids. Benny gets knocked off the raft. We find out that he can't swim, so Connor has to save him. They get on the raft, and then they end up kind of stuck on this rock. And Benny makes this joke about, like, well, at least we've come a long way. And they kind of laugh for a while. Then they go sleep in a cave overnight. And there's some, like, real iffy, almost gay panic kind of jokes.
Oh, it's absolutely kind of gay panic stuff. Like, I, again, could not love him more, but there's, like, he will go to that gay panic well, and has for quite some time.
And they wake up the next morning, and they both kind of push off each other, like, oh, we're not gay! And they're being photographed by a bunch of tourists, because apparently they're in some kind of park?
Yeah, I think that one was for Chinese audiences, because we do not really get an explanation of where they are.
We just see them walking out of, like, a gate, like they're at a fucking national park.
Yeah.
And then they just have a car. They have a fucking BMW SUV after that. Well, I guess they call somebody from the park. That's how they get the car. They make a phone call. And they end up talking to Sam, who has been taken prisoner, more or less, by that evil police captain, who it is very clear now is working with the Matador.
Yes.
So they drive their BMW SUV, finally get back to Hong Kong, and they confront Victor Wong, who Benny has been convinced this whole time is the Matador, with this phone. The phone that Esther Yee gave Connor earlier in the movie. They manage to charge the phone a little bit and realize that it has a fingerprint. You have to open it with a fingerprint. And they start thinking, oh, well, if we can prove that Victor Wong's fingerprint opens this phone, we can prove that he's the Matador, which seems like 1,000% inadmissible evidence, but I don't understand the court system of China, so maybe that would be admissible evidence there. Turns out, though, Victor Wong's thumbprint does not open that phone, because Jackie confronts him with it. He pops his thumb down on the thumbprint reader, which is not on a button like on normal phones. It's on the screen. Doesn't work. So Victor Wong is basically exonerated. Benny is kind of like, well, I don't know. I don't know what happened. This all leads up to Samantha being, like, put on this boat in the dock and, like, locked up in a room on the underside of the boat, like, way down in the lower levels. Benny and Connor go to the boat. They infiltrate it. We see Victor Wong get shot by the unseen actual Matador. And here comes the big twist. The Matador was young all along. Here's what we don't get. How the fuck Jung faked his death, why he's the Matador, or, like, who the Matador was when he died, because Jackie thought that the Matador killed him back then. I guess there's an idea that he was the Matador the whole time. There is one little speech that Jung gives where he says, you try to get by on your policeman's salary. You're content to live on the peanuts that they give you, while the criminals you catch watch you from their palaces. So he's just greedy?
Yeah, he's just a crooked cop, and he faked his own death, which, again, there's no fucking way to fake. He blew up. He is an exploded man. He exploded, Matt.
Yeah.
He exploded.
Like, if he was a crime boss already, why did he become a cop? None of it makes a goddamn lick of sense.
I think he was a cop, became a crime boss, faked his death to throw off suspicion. Because he says at one point, he's like, Jackie, you were the best detective I ever met. We have no evidence for that in this entire fucking movie. Jackie's been chasing the wrong dude this entire time. So I think he faked his death to throw off suspicion because he knew that Jackie would find him out because they were partners. And then he just lives for 9 years secretly as the Matador. Then finally reveals himself when he knows it's the climax of the movie. This whole thing's fucking stupid, Matt.
But Benny thought the Matador was responsible for Jung's death. Yeah, That's why he's been chasing after the Matador so hard for 9 years.
Well, because Jung framed the Matador. Jung said it was the Matador who killed him. Which, again, just like inspired his former partner to spend the next 9 years obsessively tracking him down. It's very stupid. It doesn't make sense. It's such a oboe. Like, they wrote the twist first, and then had to write the movie around it.
We needed a lot more shit about Jung to understand why he did any of this, or what his background was, or anything, for this twist to matter or make sense at all. But there's a scene where he goes and talks to Samantha, and Samantha's like, how are you alive? And he's like, well, you have me now. You have your father back. And then a boat hits that boat, and it starts sinking, and Samantha's gonna die. And so even though he hates swimming, he doesn't know how to swim, Benny, like, dog paddles through the water to this quarters in the lower decks of the ship to try to save Samantha, and he and Jung work together to get the door open and get her out. And then Jung is like, goodbye, my partner. And he puts his head under the fucking water, goes back into that chamber, and closes the door.
And locks himself in the room. It's not like they're trapped. It's not like there's no way out. This dude, like, goes, hey, time for me to drown. And just goes in and fucking kills himself.
Why?
Why?
Also, somewhere in here, the Russian mobsters show back up, but now they're friends with Johnny Knoxville, because Johnny Knoxville, I guess, has agreed to go back and be the father to this baby.
Well, they don't want him to die. They just want to drag him back to Siberia. So I think that's what it is. But yeah, Johnny Knoxville agrees with that. This is where we get, like, we got a little bit excited because we thought we were going to get, like, a good fight between Eve Torres and the henchwoman of the, I guess Ting Ting is her name.
Yeah.
Who's the henchwoman of the Matador.
Yeah, she's there with the suave guy with the cane all the time.
Yeah. Who is Zhang Lenzin, who was Bonnie in CZ-12, who we really liked in that movie.
Yeah,
and
we get
what we see of that fight is good, actually, but we only get to see like 20 seconds of it.
And it could be better. I said it was like arrow fighting.
Yeah.
It like everything else in this movie, it could be better.
Well, they're standing, like, they're balanced on, like, this weird Mario Brothers pipe grid, like, hitting each other with giant wrenches, you know? It like, looks really, like, it could be the setup of a good, like, solid fight scene, but it's not. It's just, like, a thing that happens.
Then we get, like, three epilogues. Epilogue the first. Connor goes back to Russia to be the father of this baby. And then there's a really confusing gag about how they immediately know that he's not the father of the baby because the baby has a unibrow and blonde hair.
Yeah.
Which looks
and
like
there's one of the henchmen has a big prominent unibrow.
Yeah. So that's a big bunch of whatever.
Also, earlier in the movie, Johnny Knoxville said you can't get pregnant the way that they did it, which, oof, yikes. It's a bad, bad joke.
Yeah. Then there's another epilogue, or there's actually an epilogue before that, where everybody's on a helicopter escaping from the sinking ship, and Jackie talks about how Young was the best partner he ever had, and Johnny Knoxville's like, and then Jackie Chan says, best Chinese partner.
Yeah, which, again, like, I feel like Jackie should have been like, because it's Jackie talking to Samantha, and she, you know, and it's her dad, and he's like, yeah, you know, he was the best partner I ever had. And I really wish that Connor had been like, hey, I know he was your dad and your friend and all, but that motherfucker tried to kill me like 5 times this week.
He tried to kill all 3 of them.
Yeah. Like, maybe we can slow it down. Maybe we can pump the brakes on the praise for this guy who tried to murder us by drowning us in a frigate. Please.
Then the third epilogue of the movie is what the whole fucking movie should have been, because Jackie Chan gets an alpaca farm. And he looks really excited about some fucking alpacas.
Which is a callback to a moment earlier in the film when we see him asleep and he's woken up by a phone call. And he has little carvings of alpacas on his bedside table. And I was like, man, I hope we find out more about his bedside alpacas. And we do!
Yeah. Why is that the only point of subtlety and complexity in the whole movie?
Yeah. I was wrong. I said there were only 2 amazing things in this movie. The third amazing thing is Jackie's reaction upon seeing the alpacas. It is light in this dark world, let me tell you.
Well, Chris, I think we've already pointed them out, but what are the high points of Skip Trace?
The musical number with the Mongolian nomads and the Matryoshka doll fight. And that is it.
There's one other thing I would say is not a fully full high point, but I would say it was half of a good gag. There's a scene somewhere in the middle of the movie where Jackie and Johnny Knoxville are just walking along. It's in the part of the movie where they walk a very, very long distance. Which is the part that feels like it takes like several weeks. And Jackie shows Johnny Knoxville how to like touch somebody at a pressure point and make them basically pass out or basically like knocks them out for a little bit.
And yeah, so like the fucking Austin Powers judo chop.
Yeah, he touches a pressure point on Johnny Knoxville's neck and Johnny Knoxville like falls to the ground. And after that, Johnny Knoxville's trying to do it to him, and it's not working. He can't do it right. Then at the very end of the movie, when they're at the alpaca farm, Connor does it to Benny, and Benny's like, you still can't do it. Benny and Samantha go off somewhere to like go for a walk and be alone for a little while. And Jackie turns to his love interest lady, who we only see in a couple scenes, and says, are they gone? And she says, yeah. And then he falls to the ground.
Does a big comedy take.
Big comedy take. Which is not bad. Not bad.
Yeah, that's it, though. That's really it.
Low points of Skip Trace.
Literally everything. I would have a hard time naming, like, a worse script for a movie that we have seen.
It's badly written. It's badly shot. It's badly edited.
It's badly acted.
Well, Johnny Knoxville is on the verge of the most grating performance in Movie Fighters history.
Yeah. That dude's, like, shoot from Tennessee and cannot keep an accent consistent in this movie.
I don't get it. I do not get it. Like, I wouldn't say any of the other actors are, like, actively bad, but none of them are really that good either.
No. I mean, like, Fan Bingbing is good. Eve Torres is good. But, like, that's it, really. The Victor Wong and the suave guy are pretty okay, but, like, Jackie's bad in this. And, like,
just like wooden. It feels like you know what it feels like? It feels like in editing they chose every bad take.
Yeah.
Like, or they only shot one take for everything.
One close, one far.
Yeah, it's rough. Also, really weird choices as far as the dialogue in this movie in regards to what language it's in. Because whether a scene is in Chinese or English, totally arbitrary. Like, obviously everything that Johnny Knoxville's in is in English, but, like, it's a coin flip whether a scene between two Chinese actors is going to be in Chinese or English.
Yeah, like when the matador dies, it's him, his daughter, and Jackie Chan, and he's about to die, and he goes, "Hey, see you on the other side, partner," or whatever the fuck he says. Like, that's in English. But, like, and sometimes...
I mean, you know, it's Hong Kong, so it's conceivable that, like, people would be speaking in English. There's just no consistency to it at all. Like,
yeah,
it's weird.
One of the worst things about this movie, Matt, you remember Miami Connection, one of our favorites.
Certainly.
You remember the scene where the one guy talks about how, you know, like, his dad was a GI who was in Korea, and like, it's like the big tearjerker emotional scene where he's trying to reunite with his father, and it's like very like community theater. Like, you remember that?
Oh yeah.
I'm sure. This movie does that worse, with Johnny Knoxville being like, "I don't even know my parents." Like, so bad.
Well, and it doesn't lead to anything.
But, it doesn't.
But even before that, he says, "You know all the great things I told you about my mom and dad? Those were lies." We never heard a word of any of that.
If they were in here, I missed it. I missed it, yeah. For sure.
It's a mess. It's a goddamn fucking mess of a movie. And also the music, we have to point out the music. It's this, like, everything except for Rolling in the Deep is like a weird knockoff version of some popular song. Like, there are several songs that sound like knockoff Jerry Lee Lewis. There's knockoff Lenny Kravitz in here.
Knockoff the theme song. I would have sworn that the theme song was
Kid Rock.
Yeah, I would have sworn that it was a non-English speaker trying to write, like, an American, like, Kid Rock song. Because the word choice is so bizarre in very specific ways, but it turns out to be, like, a Kid Rock protege. Like, Kid Rock's Apollonia did this song. It's, like, everything about this movie is just off. It's everyone was having a bad day, except, like, Eve Torres. Did okay.
Chris, what are your final thoughts about Skip Trace?
It sucks, man. Like, this might be the worst Jackie Chan movie I've ever seen.
It's hard to argue. We might need to watch The Tuxedo for comparison, but...
I've seen The Tuxedo. I saw The Tuxedo opening night in the theater, my dude.
I mean, I saw The Tuxedo years ago, too. I remember it being bad, but it's probably not this bad.
It is very bad. But it makes more sense than this. It's certainly zippier. It doesn't drag as much as this one does.
Here's what I would say is the lesson, the takeaway from Skip Trace. Never, ever try to serve two masters. Because you will end up serving neither. Because Skip Trace tries to be a cool action movie and a goofy comedy at the same time. And as a result, it is successfully neither one. It isn't an action movie, and it isn't a comedy. It isn't a successful action comedy in any way. Like, there are successful action comedies. I don't want to make it sound like there aren't. But this one totally fails in that attempt. Like, you either make a good action movie with some comedic elements to it, or you make a comedy with some action in it. This one tries to be both things completely and fails in both. It also attempts to appeal to American audiences and Chinese audiences, and I think it fails in both of those too. Like, because it was totally unappealing to us. All the stuff that seemed to be appealing, directly appealing to American audiences, felt pandering and off, like the joke about The Notebook. And I would assume that Chinese audiences largely felt the same way about, like, both Johnny Knoxville and Jackie Chan talking about the ancient Chinese proverb about how in every crisis there's an opportunity.
You say that, but this movie was number one when it opened in China. It had a $60 million opening weekend in China.
We know that opening weekend doesn't mean anything really in terms of what people think about it in terms of quality.
Yeah, I mean, that's true.
Because every Transformers movie opens at fucking number one.
Oof, that is true and upsetting.
The thing about the ancient Chinese proverb about crisis meaning opportunity that's not how that works. It's the same symbol. It's a language thing. It's not a proverb. A Chinese audience would be like, that's not what that means.
I don't know. I don't know why I'm defending this movie. It's very, very bad, and I'm tired. The best thing about this movie was that I had a Christmas tree cake while we watched it.
Well, here's looking forward to next month, where we're going to finish off the 3-month celebration of Chan for the Summer.
Save us, Steve Coogan.
We're going to be watching Around the World in 80 Days, and Lord help us, it's got to be better than Skip Trace. If nothing else, Steve Coogan is a better option than Johnny Knoxville. So we'll be back in September with that. Our theme music is by Michael Kill. The Snack Situation theme is by Matt Fisher. Our website was designed by Sean Bogus. If you would like to send us questions or otherwise get in touch with us, you can email us at moviefighterscast@gmail.com or check out moviefighters.tumblr.com, where we put some Snack Situation photos and other stuff up when we do our Snack Situation specials. We're going to do a Snack Situation special later this month, and we'll be back with another episode next month. Chris, any parting words for our listeners? Don't watch Skip Trace.
Don't watch Skip Trace.
I think that's the takeaway. See you next time, everybody.
This has been a Kleitas Media production.